Welcome to The Good Cast. This is Alex.
And this is Storm. And this is season two of The Good Cast, which is Good Enough's very own local podcast.
We have some amazing guests from our community lined up for you this year, and we are always happy to take new recommendations. So if you would like to speak to us or you know someone from our community, make sure to tell us in person, drop us a Facebook message, or
find us. You can drop us an email at goodcastpod@gmail.com.
That's goodcastpod@gmail.com. We are here in Freddy's Bar, and we have just spoken to the amazing Anvita Dixit, a resident yogi here at William Goodenough House and also studying at King's College in London. Hello, Good Cast listeners. It's Alex.
And Storm here, and we are with the lovely
Anvita Dixit, and I'm from Bombay, India.
Brilliant. Let's get right into it. Tell us more about you.
Sure. So I think one unique thing about me is that I had the privilege of growing up at a yoga institute. I've lived there for 22 years of my life, and I think it's shaped me into the person I am today and really made me grounded in ancient yogic traditional practice. And now what I'm doing is I'm pursuing sort of cultural and creative industries and trying to figure out how I can take all that ancient knowledge that I have had access to and make that into video content and put it on screen. So take spirituality and transfer it onto screen. Yeah, that's sort of what I'm trying to do.
Okay, so if we backtrack, you grew up at a yoga institute.
Yeah, I did.
Okay, please tell us more about that.
Sure. So my father is the director of the institute called Kaivalya Dham, Mumbai. And in that, that's a Sanskrit term which really means the home of enlightenment. So already from a very young age, I had access to sort of the spiritual upbringing. And at that time, obviously, I ran away from it. I was like, do not put this on my head. I don't want to. Like, everyone's doing yoga. I don't want to do it.
I don't want to do yoga, Dad. Yeah.
And then every Sunday it was like we had like fam yoga sessions, and I was like, I'm out of this.
Yeah.
So it was it really was me running away from my roots initially. But I think the more stress you get and the more anxiety that comes your way just by from external factors, that's when I started realizing how blessed I was to actually live in that environment. And initially when I was growing up, my alarm clock would literally be people saying Om loudly downstairs. I would wake up because the Om was too loud. So it was a very unique way to grow up, I would say. And it's really taken me to where I am today, in the sense that even if something stressful comes my way, I always react calmly. And I think that has a lot to do with where I grew up and just the way things were back then.
Definitely.
That is, I can tell you, I was certainly not woken up by Oms. It was more probably one of my parents screaming up the stairs to finally get up and go to school. But that is a fantastic way to...
And so interesting that... It was just too much for you. And you just couldn't cope with it anymore, and you needed to be that rebellious teenager.
I think we all have that phase where we're just like, just because our parents are telling us we won't do it, and then you have that realization where you're like, okay, no, this is actually my calling and I'd like to stick with it.
So what brought you back to it? Was the defining moment?
I think for me, there were two defining moments. One was I had yoga as a subject in school. We were like taught it as a full-on Sanskrit subject. We had exams in it. We had practical examinations, so our asanas were graded. And what's graded, more importantly, is how you do the asana. So they want to see how calm you are throughout it, not like how quickly you can do the headstand, but how you do it.
Okay.
And so just having access to that in school and seeing everybody around me taking to yoga, I realized that it's not, you know, something that has been pushed onto me. It's something that's helping everyone. So kind of that was one moment where I realized I do enjoy yoga, I do like it, and I do want to take it on. And the second time was when my father actually left for Jakarta for 3 years. So there was like a gap in it within me, you know what I mean? Because he was like my yoga mentor, and then he left, and he's also been like my source of motivation. And suddenly he wasn't there, and I was like, now I have to discover yoga for myself and anchor it within me without having my teacher. So I think those two were the defining moments where I was like, this is my practice as well, and I feel like I can own this without having without it being like I grew up in a yoga institute, so I have to like it. But
you make it your own
thing.
But interestingly, then, so when you finished up at high school, you went to study not yoga but business and marketing.
Right.
And what brought you to that?
I think for me, I was always interested in understanding consumer behavior and why people think the way they do. And also just how products are selling and understanding the culture behind it, so, which is why I took to business management and marketing. But obviously yoga stayed with me throughout, and I was like, I want to know how I can merge these two. And not in a business sense, because I've never thought of yoga as a commercial, you know, I don't want to sell it. I just want to add value through it as a service more so. And so I wanted to know how I can take marketing and digital media platforms and then combine ancient spiritual knowledge and put it onto in one vehicle and then disseminate that. And the thing is, not too many people are doing that the way that I want to do it in. So it's always a process of discovery, and it's really fascinating. So that's really how it came about. Yeah.
You are like the dream yoga instructor. You know that. You've lived and breathed yoga your entire life. Yeah. You're from India.
Yeah.
And Jan, I think in like London and the Western society, yoga is a very almost elite. But you know what I mean? It's a bit of a yummy mummy kind of thing.
It's very expensive as well in lots of places.
But which is surprising though,
And you're already doing this in our community with your giving classes on Mondays and Wednesdays. Let's just give it a plug.
Yay!
6 PM usually. It's usually out in Willie G. Right. And actually which building are you in?
I stay at Willie G as well, which is why I was like,
it's one floor
down. There we go. Amazing.
Okay,
so what days? Just tell our listeners.
It's Mondays and Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m. and it's absolutely free. So just show up with a bottle of water and the mats are there as well. So,
I will 100% endorse this class. I took it yesterday, my second class with Anvita, and I am actually almost too relaxed after it. So it really is just... And what, you know, something you said there really interested me in terms of grading yoga, or how it was graded in school, and it being more about how you're doing it, how relaxed you are, how aware you are of your breathing, as opposed to like getting the perfect pose or being the person who's the most flexible. Because I think a lot of us think, you know, when it comes to yoga, this is going to have to be hard. But if it's hard, you're doing it wrong. You know, and that's something I've picked up.
And I think a lot of people that I've met at Good Enough also, the first thing they say when I say I teach yoga, they're like, oh, but I'm not good at yoga. And then I have to kind of clarify and explain that it's not about good or bad. Because if you say good, you're implying flexibility, or you're saying it's something physical, it's competitive, but it's really a journey of self-discovery. So it can't be good or bad, because it's about you, right? So how can you put a connotation on it? And so that's really what I believe, and I'd like everyone to understand about yoga, because you're fine, just whatever your flexibility is, just start.
That's so lovely, because I know I've gone to yoga classes where the yoga instructor tries to put you in positions and you're like, my body cannot do this. Please do not make it happen. I've had someone sit on me.
Oh my god. That hasn't happened yet in Anvita's class.
No, it never happened. It's never going to happen. Because, we don't do that. And another interesting thing is we always do medical examinations, or at least involve medical advice in our classes, because we don't want you to get injured. That's the main thing. So everybody is different, and we can take care of that.
I love that.
Yeah, and it's funny, even just speaking to that kind of competitive nature, most of the class is done with the eyes closed unless you're kind of really going to injure yourself going from like sitting to standing. Up. Yeah, exactly. Whatever. But it's so... I think keeping the eyes closed as well keeps it about you, because you're not
focused exactly.
Oh look, she's doing
90 degrees. Come on. And it's like some of the other classes I've been to that happens. You see people looking at each other like, oh my god, she's like doing the complete headstand. Why can't I do it? And then that takes you away from yourself. So Hatha Yoga, being the oldest form of yoga, they make sure that your eyes are closed, and they're just like, nah, don't look at you.
Don't look.
It's all about you. So and I think for me as a teacher, when people open their eyes at the end of the class, it's so fun, just because everyone's just like, wow. They come out of a trance.
It sounds like a spiritual awakening.
It really is, honestly.
You have to come there. You've changed. I will be there. I'm keen like a bee.
I'm excited.
Now, when Alex told me you were doing your PhD on yoga, I was like, whoa, 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 this is too cool. Please least can you tell the listeners about
So I just thought I'm going to be doing the PhD, but I did do a postgraduate diploma in yoga, which was for 9 months. So for 9 whole months, for 5 hours every single day, we do, yeah.
Our faces, yeah. Our jaws have just dropped. So,
we do yoga asanas, obviously, pranayam, the breathing exercises. The lesser known breathing exercises are bandhas. So we learn such specific control of our bodies that I can lock certain muscles and prevent air from going to different parts. It's really, really difficult, but you do that. And then we, it's like, what is this world of yoga?
Is this then, why? Yes. So, if you give us an example, why would one want to do that?
Right. So, they believe your breath is closely connected with the way you think and the way you react. So, the slower you're breathing, the more calm your reaction. So, when you get control over your breath and you make it a voluntary process, you're able to tame your mind as well. And so, the more you lock in the air channels, the more you tame the way your thoughts function. That's basically why. And then another thing we learned was kriyas. Again, people don't know about this, but we basically take a rubber tube, push it through our nose and remove it from our mouth and cleanse our nasal passage.
Oh,
and it's graded, so we get...
Yeah, Storm took that one pretty hard there. Yeah. Okay.
That's one, and another, another one is...
Sorry, just technically, yes. Are you pushing it in your nostrils and using your... So is your finger going...
No, just...
It's
just the tube. So you just push it in, it's and you remove, you know, there's an opening here. It comes out from your mouth, and then you remove the whole thing out.
Okay.
And it really cleans up any mucus, the whole nasal passage. So we're able to do our breathing better because it's all cleared
Wow.
up.
And common cold.
Yeah. It's
excellent
very rare
way to treat it.
Yeah. If you're a yogi, it's rare to have the flu. Because
you're being cleansed all the time.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. And can you also control your breathing so you just like get all the phlegm out?
This has taken a turn. I think we need to go back. Let's just go back to the relaxing spiritual awakening we were talking about. So that was the diploma, and that was both theory and practical.
Yes, absolutely.
And now, now you're at King's, and what is your focus?
Right, so I'm doing cultural and creative industries, and my focus is digital media production and transnational screen production. Again, with the same idea that I have the yogic knowledge, but I want to learn ways in which I can put it onto screen. So just understanding production cycles, VFX, what are the, you know, there's virtual reality. So how can you integrate yoga with virtual reality? And so it's super unique. Also, most of my professors are very intrigued by what I'm trying to do. So I keep having discussions with them.
I can't imagine why.
I don't get it.
I mean, I'm sure I'm sure if anyone is still listening to this podcast,
you're probably bored out of your mind.
Do you see this becoming kind of an app form or being shared on an existing platform or where do you
see it? Where do I see it? So I see it. I use YouTube and IGTV most frequently. But as of now, I wouldn't say my production level has reached its maximum potential. It's still me and a screen and just me talking. But I want to figure ways in which it can be more interactive and people can follow along in real time instead of just being like, oh, she spoke about it, now what? So really, and you know how you felt at the end of the class? You felt like that because it was offline. You know what I mean? It was real time, we did it. But how do I take that experience that you had and make it online? And that's a real challenge. I'm trying to figure it out. So YouTube and IGTV.
And speaking of, do you want to tell us what are your YouTube and IGTV channels?
Sure. So on YouTube, it's just Anvita Dixit. Is A-N-V-I-T-A-D-I-X-I-T. And on IGTV, it's at Anvita.Dixit.
So okay. Perfect.
Amazing. Maybe, because with VR, we had a TED Talk at Good Enough this last year, and the one guy came on stage and he showed us how he designs cars using VR. So what do you think, what is your thinking? showing people to,
So, I mean, for me, to take you through an entire yoga class on VR would be the ideal goal, because then you live it and you feel every emotion that, you know, you should feel in an offline class. But the VR technology in India hasn't developed as much, which is a real challenge. Also, my long-term aim is definitely to help Indians with it, because I don't know if you know this, but in India and a lot of countries that were colonized, what happens is we run away from our cultural identity. You know, so like when the West tells us yoga is cool, it's cool, but we won't look at it on our own and be like, we want to do this. So I want to take VR and like modern communication tools and take it back home to India and be like, hey guys, come on, this, you can do this, and own your own cultural identity.
You know, that's something that I was wondering about in class was whether you know, the practice of yoga in your daily life is limited to certain sectors of Indian society, or whether it's, or you know, does every child in India who's going to school have yoga as a subject?
So in school, in the primary sections, but they don't study theoretically. So everyone is aware of the basic asana names, and you do it as a physical practice, but they wouldn't be in depth into it.
Okay.
And also some of them, I mean, you know how children are, they some of them can't sit still for that long, so they develop a dislike pretty early on, because they're like, I don't want to be in this posture for too long. So people in India are aware of yoga, they know that it comes from here, and also it's not as elitist, I would say, as in the Western world. If you have yoga retreats, they're not as high priced. It's more done as an act of service. It's free. So the institute I was born in, when it was created in the 1920s, it was entirely free of cost. They ran only on government funding, and they didn't charge any patients. Anybody that came in got free treatment.
Wow.
So it was, it's considered to be for the masses and not for like a higher sort of class.
I wonder, India is just, you're actually very progressive in that regard, because that medicine is becoming more holistic. People are looking at like your gut health and looking at everything. So I wonder if we're going to, hopefully the government can actually sponsor yoga retreats. Because
holding out for that one. For good cast hosts, hopefully.
Definitely.
You know, maybe Good Enough actually could sponsor
it.
That would be good.
Not a bad idea, definitely. But yeah, if someone, I mean, what happens tends to happen with creative industries and even with yoga is that if it becomes more about the money making process, you kind of lose the authenticity in the practice, you know, because you're so focused on how can I make more money that you're not actually focused on service. So it's a conundrum, really. You have to find a sort of balance, and that's what I appreciate about the Indian government, is that they're very like, yes, come on, you will do yoga and we will fund it. So it's a good thing.
And do you ever think like the government here in the UK could see the benefit of yoga and bring it into schools?
I really think they should, because if you learn meditation early on and tap into your inner self. Okay, so I'll tell you one interesting thing. In Buddhist schools and in yoga schools, before you learn about math and any English, anything, you first learn about breath and who are you. The first year is spent in understanding, who am I, what defines me, am I my body, my name and my characteristics, or am I a spiritual entity, what am I? And once you're able to decipher that, then they give you like English or Hindi or math. But it's internal understanding before external understanding.
So it's like the fundamental step is self-actualization.
Yeah.
Whereas self-actualization in the Western world is only now sort of becoming, in my spare time, I'm like, self-actualized.
Absolutely, I'll find myself in 10 minutes on Headspace or something like that.
Exactly. So it's very interesting to see the way the cultures differ. But I think there's a lot to learn from both sides. Because I think what happened with Eastern culture and Indian traditions is that they got so focused inwards that then the external development was sort of lacking. You know what I mean? Like, in terms of technology, the West is doing a fantastic job. So there's a lot to learn that way on how we can, not commercialize, but at least learn how to do things more easily, not only be inward focused, but also understand these things.
Best of both worlds.
Best of both worlds,
So you haven't started your PhD yet.
No.
But so you're hoping to get it going and then finish it in 3-4 years?
So right now I'm just finishing my master's, so that's like 1 year, and then when I go back, there's a lot of PhDs in India, so hopefully I'll do one there.
Amazing.
In yoga, and then and then maybe self-actualize in the process.
Yes.
You sound pretty self-actualized already.
You are calming me down. This is a very, I feel super tranquilized. Do you meditation in the morning? Have you got a certain ritual?
Yeah, I wake up at 5 and
okay.
And, yeah. All
right. On most days, sometimes when I have deadlines, I push it a bit, but most days I try to wake up at 5, just, you know, do like drink some hot green tea, do that kind of stuff, then start yoga by 5:30. So take about 1.5 hours, so 5:30 to 7 is my own yoga practice, so I'll do like meditation, all the asanas. I try to do an asana for each category, so to like exercise my body in all different ways, and also do a couple of pranayama practices. And then I begin my day, because then I really feel like I know what I want, and I feel like I'm running the day isn't running me, so it really puts me in a place of intent. And action.
And if you don't do it, can you notice the difference?
I definitely notice the difference, but I feel like when you do yoga for that long, it's like a reservoir, right? I always say this in class. I have fuel to get on with, but over like if a week or 2 weeks, if I don't do it, then I can tell that okay, I'm feeling a little shaky and not centered. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it definitely does.
So for people like myself that I don't really do yoga, what would you say is a good way to start, get it going?
To get into it? Yeah, I think...
Go to the classes. Yeah. Mondays and Wednesdays, 6 p.m.
Right. It's being paid for this.
No, I genuinely think, for me, I think the theory rings true for me first. Like I said in the beginning, I ran away from yoga a lot because it was so physical. I was like, what is the point? I just like stretch a bit and there's nothing there. And I'm a very like emotional, like empathetic person. So the minute the theory was introduced to me and I was like, oh, they want us to discover ourselves. That makes sense. So when you understand theoretically what it is, and I would definitely recommend checking out videos on YouTube, not just mine. There are like a lot of gurus, like Sadhguru, for example, if you watch his stuff, you get so interested in it mentally that then actually committing to the class physically is not that difficult. Mm-hmm. At least that's how it works for me. So maybe you could try that. Yeah.
That makes sense, definitely.
I am being paid a small amount for disclosure. But I think we are, you know, particularly lucky to have you doing these classes. It's a really easy way for good enough members to actually get that introduction. Because I'd literally never done any yoga before, and it's a very, you know, no one's coming around to sit on you and tell you like, this is how you do this pose.
So nice. I'm so glad.
So it's good to know. It's a safe space absolute beginners.
Exactly. So and it's always ask for your own capacity. So like I keep saying, class, if you feel pain, you go back to normal. You don't extend beyond your capacity.
Even with mental health, because postgraduate students and PhD students especially are predisposed to depression. And I know there's one university in particular that lately has had a lot of suicides. Mm. So this is actually so good for mental health.
So I think the one of the key causes of mental health is not understanding why these external factors are affecting you and not being able to channelize your energy correctly. Again, I'm sure you've heard of chakras. Have you guys heard like the chakras in your body?
I've heard
people say, like, I've heard a lot of people abroad say, I need to balance my chakras to be in, which basically means that you need to balance your energy out. Okay. I think with mental illness and mental health issues, what happens is you have all this energy inside of you and you don't know how to influence it to make you feel centered. And I think once you master that, and like you said, if there's meditation in schools and just it's just available to people, the suicide rates and even the cases of mental health do reduce. We've seen that in India and at our institute.
I can imagine.
But even I think yesterday at the beginning of class you had us count our breaths and at the end count again. And it's literally a factor of, and obviously for everyone in the class it's reduced by the end of by the end of it, because you're breathing deeper, you're more aware of it, and you're kind of trying to center yourself and look at how it's not, you know, it's not actually the situation, it's how you're responding to it and the effect it's having on you. I'm a very good student, so
you really
you know, and I think that's something we can all relate to. If you were to stop in a very stressful situation, you would notice you're breathing quicker, your heart rate, your blood pressure, everything is going.
Yeah.
So being able to change how you react is the key.
And my dad would always say this when I was, so I have a younger brother, and he would like, when he was younger, he would like pull my hair because he was like two, you know, and be like, whatever. And I would be like, do not touch me. And my dad was like, of course, he, you know, reprimanded him and told him to stay away from me. But he also told me that your reaction is what matters the most. You're reacting this way. You're giving him the power to exercise control over you and get this emotion out of you. And I was like, literally, dad, what the hell? And, you know, but now you see it and you're like, okay, he was trying to tell me about yoga theory all along. You see small things that now that click and I'm like, oh, my dad said that when I was six. Now seven, I'm like, what the
hell? I think it's called, in psychology, it's called like non-complimentary behavior, where if someone is aggressive to you, they expect you're going to resonate that and be aggressive back. And then you confuse them completely when you're so nice back. And then they're super nice back to you. So it's like mirroring.
And that's what Gandhi believed. I'm sure like, you guys have heard of Mahatma Gandhi. Yeah. So he, his non-violence movement was all about, if they slap you on one cheek, you give them the other cheek and be like, here. And then the person who's committing that aggression has a change of heart because they're like, oh my god,
absolutely,
you know?
I love it. Well, thank you so much for your time, and being
enlightening.
Alex is a changed person. You're glowing, Ashley. You are glowing.
And thank you guys so much for having me. It was a wonderful time,
dude. It was amazing having you.
Thanks for talking to us.
What we're going to try to do, Alex and I, is to ask every guest which podcast they're currently listening to and what they suggest. So Invita had a great suggestion.
Yeah, so if you feel particularly enlightened after Invita's podcast, she recommended The School of Greatness, which is basically trying to interview and look at people who are
great
and figure out how they're great and how you can be great too. And we would love to hear from you if you want to get involved, or if you have some skills that you'd like to share with us, such as editing or music, or...
I mean, if you would like to do the editing for us...
That would be ideal.
We are happy with that.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.